Most people would agree that studying popular music provides valuable insights into any culture, whether it be jazz, folk music, or rhythm and blues. Some would question, however, the value of examining that part of rock and roll music known as heavy metal. But hear us out as Talking History's Eileen Dugan investigates that subject with Robert Walzer.
Few forms of modern American music have been as publicly vilified as heavy metal. Health experts decry its volume, parents fret over allegedly violent and satanic lyrics, and musicians in other fields declare that it just isn't good music. We tend to hear about heavy metal from its critics. But what do metal musicians and their fans think about their music? What to them is the purpose, the value, even the artistry of heavy metal? With us today to discuss this musical form is Dr. Robert Walzer, Chair of Musicology at the University of California at Los Angeles. Professor Walzer is the author of Running with the Devil, Power, Gender, and Madness in Heavy Metal Music. Welcome, Dr. Walzer.
Hi, good to be here.
How did you, as an academic, get involved in studying heavy metal?
Well, it was really the other way around. I was a music major, playing trumpet and heading for a career playing in an orchestra. And I started playing in bands, playing guitar, and got more and more involved in playing rock music. And then while I was finishing up a doctorate in trumpet performance, I got interested in the idea of studying music, you know, doing musicology. So I switched over and did a degree in musicology. And the book you mentioned was a revision of the dissertation that I wrote.
And how are heavy metal musicians and heavy metal music commonly perceived?
Well, it's changed a lot over time. My book was mostly concerned with the 80s, particularly the late 80s, when heavy metal was the single most popular style of music around. And I got interested in writing the book because of this tremendous popularity, and only critics were being heard from. And so you had millions of people building their lives around this music, and millions of other people who wanted to kill them for it. And it seemed like a really kind of rich area of study. The other thing was that I liked the music. I was impressed by technically how the music worked, and thought it was worth digging into.
What do you think are the most common misperceptions about heavy metal?
Well, I think it's like any kind of culture. If you're outside the culture, it's easy to misread it. It's easy to see something like, oh, Ozzy Osbourne mentioned the devil. He must be in favor of Satanism. When in fact, you know, the devil is not a strange topic. 55% of Americans believe in the existence of the devil. You hear about the devil all the time at church services, and that doesn't mean, you know, that people are promoting the devil. So it's just, from the outside, it's easy to misread little bits and not understand the coherence of the culture itself.
What are the origins of heavy metal?
Really comes out of rhythm and blues, and you know, and then that turns into rock and roll, and that turns into a harder kind of rock in the 60s, and we get a louder, more distorted sound. The first bands, really, that are usually called heavy metal, all formed or all recording around 1969-70, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, and Black Sabbath.
And why did it become such a phenomenon in the 70s and 80s?
Well, it had cycled. It was popular for a while in the 70s, and then died down. And at the end of the 70s, people thought it was pretty much over. And then there was a kind of new wave of heavy metal again in the 80s, and it became the most popular form of the late 80s. And then we had another kind of shift at the turn of the 90s. We had Guns N' Roses and then Nirvana coming along and kind of pulling a lot of the heavy metal audience over towards music that was more punk influenced and, for example, didn't have all the virtuosic guitar solos that were important in the 80s.
To what extent does heavy metal involve a discourse between performers and their audience?
I think what you're referring to, I guess, would be the way that there are a variety of ways that people work at identifying with heavy metal musicians. You know, the musicians are larger, more powerful, more colorful, more successful versions of what fans might like to be. And so fan magazines are very important for a lot of metal fans as a way of getting access through pictures, through interviews, you know, to details about the stars, and helps people connect a little more with them.
What draws an audience to heavy metal? Is it just the volume or something in the lyrics, perhaps?
Well, heavy metal is a term that it covers a lot of different kinds of music. And I spent some time in the book distinguishing various different kinds of music. You might have people who like a lot of different kinds of heavy metal, or you have people who are very narrow fans of one style. Someone might be a fan of Metallica and hate Van Halen, or in the 80s, you know, you had Poison fans and Judas Priest fans, and they didn't overlap a lot. So each style is not just a set of musical styles, but also certain kinds of lyrical topics show up in some bands and not in others. Poison might sing about love, but Judas Priest won't. And so people are attracted to the bands that deliver the combination, the kind of identity that they want to have. And that involves lyrics, but it also involves costumes and presentation and also the particular way that the music works.
When you listen to heavy metal, the first thing that hits you is just the power of it. And why is power, and how is power central to heavy metal?
I think power is central to lots and lots of music. It's just that power comes in different forms. When we hear heavy metal, we hear a lot of volume, and we hear a lot of distortion, and those things signal power to us. But if you go to a Mahler symphony, you're going to hear a lot of volume, too, and the volume and the sense of power in a piece of music like that is also very, very crucial to the experience that people seek out when they listen to that music. So I talked some about adolescence and heavy metal and how heavy metal serves to give people who don't, in fact, have a lot of power a feeling of empowerment, people who don't have any economic power, people who feel marginalized or ignored by society, by their parents, by whomever, can find in heavy metal an experience of being powerful, you know, that is very attractive to them.
And how is power evident in the lyrics of heavy metal?
Well, in a number of ways, I guess. Sometimes you might have fairly aggressive lyrics. Other times you might have lyrics that seem transgressive, like Ozzy Osbourne singing about the dark side of things, about mystery, about the occult. And that's transgressive, and transgressing is a form of power. Or you could have songs about partying, and you could have, you know, a whole range of different kinds of topics. But in some way or other, they're all connecting with that desire that, you know, I think not just adolescents, but all of us have, to feel capable, to feel able to act in the world and able to garner some respect.
Among the most interesting topics of your book, I thought, was your discussion of metal musicians' connections to classical music. How would you explain that?
I go through a number of musicians, Eddie Van Halen, Randy Rhoads, who played with Ozzy Osbourne for a while, Ritchie Blackmore, who was in Deep Purple, and talked about, in all those cases, these are all guitar players who came up having classical music training as kids. Eddie Van Halen practiced, you know, Mozart on the piano and so on. And that early exposure gave them some resources to draw upon later when they started bringing those classical influences into heavy metal in a much bigger way than it happened earlier. And it's an unusual thing. It's the kind of thing you can't predict or make up, that these people would seize on this music and treat it as something that they had every right to claim. And another thing that particularly intrigued me about it is that classical music today tends to be marketed as just a category that embraces everything. It's all just great. It's all interchangeable. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about Monteverdi or Mozart or Stravinsky. It's all marketed the same way by the classical music industry. But these musicians heard very specific things that they were attracted to. They were attracted to Bach and Vivaldi. They were not attracted to, say, Mozart or Beethoven. So they're responding very specifically to ways of making music, to musical resources, to certain harmonic progressions, certain kinds of figuration that they can adapt from the organ or the violin and transfer to the electric guitar. And they weren't daunted by the fact that this wasn't supposed to be their music, or they weren't supposed to be fusing it. They just went right ahead and did it, and I think produced some glorious stuff.
What is the role of women in heavy metal?
Fairly minor, has been. There were a few people, Lita Ford in the 80s, who had some success. It was the case, I think, that heavy metal fans, male or female, tended to respond to male artists, and it was hard for women to do much. That's changed in the 90s somewhat as the genre has blurred more, but still, I think, overwhelmingly, what people would call heavy metal is very male-dominated.
And what about the text? How are women treated in the lyrics of heavy metal?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're not at all. Judas Priest, for example, you don't have any mention of gender at all. If there's some reference to a relationship, the sex of the other person isn't mentioned. And this is, you know, partly because Rob Halford was gay when he was with the band. But it's also that it was a way of portraying a world where gender was not an issue, where gender anxieties, which are, of course, are very important for young men, weren't at issue at all. What was at issue was empowerment. So you have that kind of inscription, writing women sort of out of the picture, or occasionally you have overt misogyny. That happens much less than people think it does. A band like Wasp, which really wasn't all that popular, or Motley Crue, which was. You sometimes have romantic heavy metal, Bon Jovi, Poison, you know, bands more toward the pop side of things, who sing out-and-out love songs, and that was a big part of metal's popularity in the 80s. And then you have androgyny showing up, too, the kind of cross-dressing and gender blurring, particularly in the costuming and hair and makeup and so on. And so it's a very complicated genre in terms of the different gender identities that it articulates.
And how does madness fit into heavy metal?
Iron Maiden had a song called Can I Play With Madness, and I took that as a chapter title in my book. And I think there's a lot of attractiveness for a lot of people to the idea of breaking through what seems to be too orderly a world, too regimented a world, too restrictive a world, and cutting loose. We can see this in a whole variety of art, not just popular art, not just 20th century. You know, go back to the Romantics in the 19th century. Go back to Berlioz. You know, you have the Symphonie Fantastique, which is all about drugs and sex and Satanism from its program. So it's not a new impulse. It's one that's easy, again, to misunderstand and demonize. I think heavy metal fans were, throughout the 80s, often scapegoated as though society wouldn't have any problems if people weren't listening to Ozzy Osbourne, you know, as though we had a perfectly functioning society except for the kind of music that kids were listening to.
Who do you think is the most intriguing heavy metal musician, either past or present?
I guess I musically, I can always go back and listen to Eddie Van Halen. I think he has incredible technique, but also has a kind of bluesiness in his playing that just was unmatched, I think. Other than instrumental, I guess Ozzy Osbourne is very interesting. He's had an enormously long career. He's still headlining tours now, you know, 30 years later. And he has a kind of interesting blend of positions, I think. He's ironic, but he also seems empathetic. He toys with, satanic references and so on, but he always does it with a sense of humor, a sense of irony. His voice is not anything you would think to write home about, but it's a kind of paranoid whine that seems to speak to a lot of people, seems to represent and articulate something that a lot of people feel, and it's done so for decades now.
The musicians that we've been talking about, as you say, Ozzy Osbourne on the road for 30 years, Van Halen on the road for many years, but what do you think is the future of heavy metal music?
Well, that's the question I always hate getting asked, because music works, culture is so complicated, people are so creative, that you can never predict what's going to happen. We can look back on something like that classical influence on heavy metal in the 80s and think, you know, how did that happen? And we can sort of figure out how it happened, but there was no way we could have predicted it, that these kids would get their hands on this old music and make something really new out of it. So right now we're in a period where the genre is kind of blurred. doesn't have a lot of presence on the pop charts. It's now, the term is now identified with more underground and heavy, very noisy styles. It could be that, you know, we'll have another resurgence and guitar, you know, virtuosity will come back and metal will be on the charts again, but who knows?
All right, well, thank you very much, Dr. Walser.
Sure, no problem.
We have been talking with Dr. Robert Walser, Chair of Musicology at the University of California at Los Angeles and author of Running with the Devil, Power, Gender, and Madness in Heavy Metal Music.